Welcome to Forums for a Future. The subject of the current series of podcasts is entitled Living in the Future Tense. This series is based on the proposition that the choices we make today will have irreversible consequences within our own lifetime. Thus, for those of us living in this, the postmodern era, our new reality is that we are living in the future tense. Today is tomorrow. In the previous era, the modern era, people lived in the present tense. They believed that they could have whatever they wanted now. They lived as if there was no tomorrow. However, the defining feature of living our life in the future tense is that we are currently taking to the limit every aspect of our economic, political, and social existence. The clearest example is the rapid exponential growth in world population over the past 100 years, which has exceeded the capacity of the planet to replace the energy used and to absorb the waste produced. But there are many other indications that we are living in exponential times, for which population growth can serve as a metaphor for the more general concept of taking it to the limit one more time. The political, economic, and social reality of meeting the limits will be the defining moments of the postmodern era. The time span is a 50-year interval encompassing the lifespan of the majority of people who are alive today. We must now start living in the future tense, for today is our tomorrow. Greenhouse gas emissions are one of the many specific issues that we are taking to the limit yet one more time. For the past 1,000 years, the level of CO2 in the atmosphere has remained relatively constant at 280 parts per million. But, starting with the Industrial Revolution, it has been increasing at an accelerating rate to 390 parts per million, well above the upper safety limit of 350 parts per million. In December of 2009, the United Nations held a climate change summit in Copenhagen to attempt to set world policy standards for greenhouse gas emissions. The United States and China were the principal players as the two top greenhouse gas producing countries. The summit ended without any comprehensive agreement. At the summit in Cancun in 2010, the nations focused on refining the technical details of the goals established at Copenhagen and reaffirmed their pledge to lower emissions, but postponed any major decisions on how this was to be accomplished. Today's podcast, number 35, is the first part of a three-part series on the World Summit negotiations to combat climate change. Part 1 in this series, podcast number 35, will explain why the proposals of both the United States and China at Copenhagen and Cancun were self-serving and why neither could expect the other to agree with them. Part 2 in the series, podcast number 36, will provide a rationale for an alternative world standard that is equally fair for both countries. And part 3 in the series, podcast number 37, will explain why neither the United States or China have been able politically to reach an agreement, and it will provide the means for achieving
mutual cooperation.
Part 1, why Copenhagen and Cancun failed. At the summit held in Cancun in 2010, unlike the one in Copenhagen, the heads of state of the major nations did not attend, and the large issues of public contention between the United States and China, and with the least developed nations, was avoided by focusing on technical procedures for achieving some of the goals outlined in Copenhagen in 2009. The two central issues of establishing legally binding global standards and an extension of the Cato Protocol were postponed for future negotiations. It's important to understand the reasons for these failures in order to identify the accommodations that must occur if the next summit, scheduled for Durban, South Africa in 2011, is to avoid a similar fate. The United States has proposed that countries should agree to absolute levels of reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. In contrast, China has proposed that limits be set in terms of a portion of the gross domestic product. These are both self-serving proposals and something that neither could realistically expect the other to agree with. In this sense, both represent bad faith negotiations. I will explain why this is so. Consider first that the United States is rapidly losing its industrial base. From 1900 to 2007, the United States lost 2% of its share of the world's gross domestic product, and it is projected to lose an additional 3% by 2020. Since the CO2 emissions of both countries closely track gross domestic product, any reduction or increase in the world share of gross domestic product will also proportionately affect the amount of CO2 emissions. At the Copenhagen negotiations, the United States' position was that both countries should set limits on total emissions and that by 2020, the United States would reduce its total CO2 emissions by 17%. This is an amount that can largely be accounted for as a result of the projected decline in the U.S. share of world gross domestic product and from new technologies already in place. On the other hand, this standard would negatively impact China's fast-growing economy. As a world standard, it was an empty offer. Now consider China. From 1990 to the present, China's percentage of the world's gross domestic product grew from 4% to its present level of 11% and projected to increase to 18% by 2020. There has been a constant linear increase in emissions over the same period of time. China's position was to set limits on the intensity of CO2 emissions as a percentage of gross domestic product, so that by 2020, China would reduce its intensity by 40%. This proposal does not reduce emissions, but rather the rate at which emissions grow. However, without any change from business as usual, China's projected intensity ratio from 2007 to 2020 would fall 21%, simply as a statistical artifact of its increasingly larger share of the gross domestic product of the world. A constant excess of 10 units of CO2 is a smaller ratio of 18 units than it is of 11 units of gross domestic product. That's the explanation. The remaining intensity reduction is already built into China's development plan for fixing its own unhealthy quality of air. On the other hand, China's proposal would seriously impact a U.S. economy that has already achieved a lower level of intensity than China's projected goal. As a world standard, it too was an empty offer. In the next podcast, part two of the series on the United Nations Climate Change Summits, I will provide a rationale for an alternative world standard that is equally fair for both the United States and the other developed nations, and for China and the other developing nations.
We do not want the final refrain of our era to read. We are taking it to the limit, one last time.